Hank called earlier this summer and, you know, asked about presenting. I said, yeah, this would be a great opportunity to really talk about a breeding program to try to give some ideas of where we come from. And also understand that being a breeder, I'm going to come from probably a little bit different perspective than what some of the other guys will. Now, as all companies, everybody's got to have their legal statement up there, so we got our typical legal verbiage, blah, 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 you know, forward-looking statement. You know, it's all Greek. So, we do what we can. One of the things to really understand, too, is like I said, from a breeding perspective, it's going to be different. And our challenge, and Joel mentioned it too, talking about genetic gain. A little simple formula for genetic gain is looking at the heritability, these traits, how are they inherited, how can they repeat, how they follow through every year, multiplied by the selection intensity, what we put on those populations, what we're looking for, what we're trying to do, and the variation that's out there. What kind of improvements can we make? What are our options to do it? And our nemesis is time. It just takes time to get through this procedure, to get everything done, everything evaluated, and get to that level that we need to. And you've probably heard it takes 10 years from when we start a program or population to it becomes a commercial line. Sometimes you can get a little lucky and it's 9 years. A lot of times it can be a little bit later than that. So really just kind of give an idea. From the breeding perspective, it's going to take us 4 or 5 years, 6 years to get this done. We start off in really trying to create useful variation, things that we can manipulate and things that are an advantage to us. Because I've created a lot of variation that's not useful. And so we get this, we go through our whole processes, we have disease screenings, molecular biology tools, molecular marker tools, to really try to help us find those advantages. What are we looking for? Why were these populations created? There's goals, there's targets in place, and that's what our challenge is going for. And when we get to that point, and like I said, the little last bullet up there is we have stabilized perceived advantages. They're perceived because we haven't put these in the yield trial yet. We don't know what they're really going to look like in on-farm grower conditions. And again, a lot of this is going to be small plots, but really what's it going to yield and what benefit are we going to be able to achieve from that? So once they move into a testing, you're still looking at 4 to 5 years from when you start to something that you can finish up with. And when you're first starting off, you have a very small amount of seed supply that you're able to work with. So during the testing network and going through that process, we're also having to run seed increase plans and get it to a point where we have enough seed, pure seed, quality seed to test for next year. So we start off really within the regions, and for us, we'll start off in the Mid-South at a few locations, just really trying to help give us an idea of what we've got, what's there, what we can get rid of, what we need to keep. And as the lines advance from their performance, we increase our testing footprint. We cover a little bit more of the Mid-South, or we branch things out a little bit more to the Southeast, and that's where you start getting into a little bit wider area, give you a better idea of where things fit, where they perform. And at our later stages of testing, of course, we're going across the belt. And again, it goes back to what we're really looking at is we have these lines. We have a few years of testing with them. Where do they fit? But also, where do they not fit? Because sometimes it's just as important to know what you keep as to know what you need to throw away. And so that's a balance that we're trying to look for. You can overload a program pretty easily by keeping things that you don't need to. So we try to make those cuts cleanly and effectively and efficiently as quick as we can. So how do we get there? Joel mentioned it a little bit, talking about 2,000 lines, so I just want to run through a hypothetical situation. So we get in there, and I have 1,000 lines that I perceive have some advantages. Realistically, that selection intensity and that genetic gain formula, once you start applying that, it's really about 30%, 40%, if you're lucky, 20%, quite realistic, sometimes that you keep. So out of that 1,000, now you have 300 lines that you can carry to your first year of trials. After you go through that, and really you're looking at trying to, what do we not want to keep? What's not going to perform? What's not fitting? What really didn't, we saw the previous year, didn't continue to see this year after our data. You throw away half of them. Second year of trials, again, that selection intensity factor, only keep about 30% again. So now you're down to 45. Third year, about 20% are kept. Fourth year, you go from 15 that you started with to 3. And during this process, I mean, it's also when trade integration starts, when we start moving things into greenhouse, because we're hedging our bets, but we can't start 150 lines. I mean, if that's for one program, you've got 3 or 4 programs. Greenhouses, with the way we're structured, is not really set up to handle that much. So we have to really cull this material down. You can start 9, you can start 45, but you really got to work through the material pretty quick. So when we get down to that final number and you're looking, okay, now we have 3 projects, 3 different lines that we're moving forward. We're also, by that point, we've got traded versions of these coming through as well. So we have a really good understanding and idea of where this material should fit. We have trait packages that go along with it. And then we can really hit broad-scale testing, again, for determining your area of fit. Last year, in our ACE trials, commercial lines on your left, the experimentals that we had in our trials on the right side. And you can see the Planet Acres map, and I'm sure most of us have seen this several times over the years. So for our testing network, what we're really trying to capture and is looking at is for that area of fit. So we really saturate these different environments to really have an idea of, you know, on a farmer's field, in their management techniques, how does it work? So through that, you know, we're looking at a lot of things that are listed there: soil type, population, the tillage, the fertility, irrigation methods, disease and pest in the area. You know, really under a full management practice, this is how lines are going to perform. And this is what we need to know going forward. So after all that, and we've gathered all this data, looked at all this performance in all these different environments, along with all the management practices that go along with it. You know, and as you said, we've got yield, turnout, fiber package, diseases, you know, the trait package. Is it the right package for the area? We end up 200 plus locations, multiple years, multiple environments, that all this data that we've accumulated, we've got a pretty good idea of what's working, what's not, and what we need to do with it. So this is the challenging part, because you've got to put all your cards on the table at this meeting. This is where everybody comes together, from the breeding, because we have the whole history of the material and where it started, where it ended up, our research agronomist, all the way through business, sales, marketing. Everybody's involved in trying to make this decision on what we need to do. And really, all right, this is the question. If we release this line as a next-gen variety, does it bring value? And that's not money, that's value. I pulled this directly out of one of our slide decks out of there. And look, this is across just Texas data, all wrapped up together. And there's numbers on here that you can say, ooh, I would not plant that. But there's others that sit there and say, yeah, you know what? Those varieties did really good for me. So we have an idea of where things are working, whether or not, what all the different parameters are for it. And so we're looking at all that going forward. So is it bringing value? And that's not for us. Pretty much for any company as well, too. If we're selling it, we're going to get a value off of that. 2019, we tested those six experimental lines. We're releasing one this year. All of the cost for those other five, through all the 10 years of development, production, integration, molecular work, everything else, the company eats those costs. There is no value on those other five for us. There's total expenses. So that's one thing to understand, too, that, yes, as we go through this, there's a lot of things that happen behind the scenes not everybody's always aware of. So we understand the value to our customers because it has to be a value for us, but it also has to be a value to the customer. Our owner is a farmer himself, completely understands the meaning of the word value and what we're able to bring to the market and why. So the original thing, and I'm going to wrap up because it's really what we're looking at is trying to get to that spot and what we're wanting to do and bring value for our company, but also for our customers and going through that. The original legal slide had this on here. And breeding, variety development, variety selection is a lot of Greek to a lot of people if you're not involved in it day to day. We're not going to cover everything we need to right now. Catch us 101. I'd love to talk to you more, and we can translate some of this. So, thank you.
Thanks, Mike.